Welcome to For the Health of It, an intimate look at public health in Cowley County, Kansas. Join us as we discuss topics that are impacting public health in our community and learn about what we do at your local health department. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of For the Health of It, Cowley County. I'm Tom Langer, your host, the administrator and public health officer at the health department. And with me again today, as always, is Allie. Say hello, Allie.
Hello, everyone.
And we also have a really very special guest with us this morning, and it is Karen Sadler, who is the director of nursing at the health department. Karen, say hello to everybody and tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. Well, hello, everybody. Again, my name is Karen Sadler, Director of Nursing at Cowley County Health Department. I have been in the public health setting for over 23 years now. Love it. Didn't know much about it when I got into it, but love every aspect of it and helping keeping our community healthy and safe and visiting with clients and families on a long-term basis, providing information, education, and just following them through from birth till we're older. So love it, yeah.
Cradle the grave.
That's
what
right.
We always say, yeah. Karen, you've been public health nurse. You started your career out in Southwest Kansas, right?
Yes.
Where was that at?
Yes, that's correct. Scott County.
Scott County.
Scott City. Mm-hmm. Yes, out there for over, out there for 30 years, public nursing, though, for 15, so.
And then you came here, I remember it was like, was it the same summer that I got here?
Yep,
just
a little later.
Just a little bit later.
In the fall.
So you've been here
correct.
8 years as now as well. So,
yeah,
well, we're
great.
Glad you're on the broadcast with us today, because today's topic is something that I think is going to bring up memories or create emotional response just when we say the topic itself, which is back to school. And, you know, as we go into this, what we're, of course, going to look at is the public health aspects of it. But just the term back to school, I think it kind of elicits a response. And depending upon your age group, it may mean different things. Allie, when you went to school, I'm talking about when you were little, grade school, back to school. What did it mean to you?
Back to school, I always was excited to have the new school supplies and the new backpack and the smell of the crayons. I really didn't think of health. Back to school, I got to see my friends again.
You know, I remember as a kid, back to school, we actually had to go back to school, you know, and all of those things that went into it. But things changed, and Karen, you can probably appreciate this because we're both parents and grandparents. With your kids, when it was time to go back to school, what was the thought process that you went through as a parent in those days?
Oh, I think you go through a variety of different thoughts. Again, making sure that your children have all the supplies they need, new clothes, school supplies, making sure that schedules are all, you know, everybody knows what kind of schedule you're on. And then also health, making sure that my kids have what they need and that they stay healthy throughout the school year. So, you know, that's something a parent thinks of, like Allie said, not the kids.
Yeah, the kids think of having to go back to bed again at 9 o'clock.
True.
I remember a lot of different thoughts and emotions. Okay, back to school, great. Oh my goodness, this is also the same month that we have to pay for car tags. Mm. Now we've got to go out and buy the supplies and buy all the new clothes and all of that stuff. And I remember the little bit of anxiety that went into that as a parent, and making sure that we had everything done. And part of the reason that we're, you know, doing this topic today is to hopefully alleviate some of that stress, because we want to give parents and anybody that's listening an idea of how to plan for this and how to get your kiddos ready to go back to school, especially making sure that they are healthy and they stay healthy through the school year. So that's going to be the major focus on what we'll talk about today. I know that we want to absolutely take a look at the pros and cons or the things that, we have to do at the health department in making sure that we keep the entirety of the population healthy. I want to make sure that when we have our conversation today, that we're going to be breaking it down into, you know, and defining things for moms and dads that they may not be aware of. Okay. I think if we talk about immunizations, most everybody understands what that is. Right. Would you agree, you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. That's correct. You know, it's, you got to come in and the kids have to be vaccinated. Let's talk a little bit about why that's important. Karen, you know, we have specific schedules that we take a look at children based upon their childhood disease likelihood and utilizing the required vaccines to make sure that they are immunized before they get into a setting again where they're back into a small confined space with a bunch of other children. I mean, most people don't understand why it is we do this. And Allie, we've discussed some numbers in the county. Right. Can you tell us, do you have those numbers on the, you know, on your sheet there about how many kids we have, say, in the county between the age of 5 and what, 18?
Yes.
I guess that's considered the school age. Give us some numbers.
Yeah. So looking at the 2022 census data, it looks like in the county, we have about 17.5% of our total population that is in that cohort. So that ends up being just over 6,000 kids.
Yeah, that's quite a few. I mean, when you consider that's the number of school-age children in the county that every year are going to be coming together, you know, spread out throughout the districts, but that's the number of them. It is why we find out that they become the early indicator. We watch that population very, very closely every single year because they are the, oh, I hate to say it, they're like the canaries in the coal mine. They show us basically what's coming as far as illness and sickness each and every year. So we see them come together. When do they start now? About the end of August? I mean, maybe even sooner than that. Yeah.
End of August.
Yeah. Back when I went to school, which was before schools were air conditioned. Okay. We'll just put it that way.
That was
the fun times back when we didn't have air conditioning and you had to open the windows up and you had fans in your rooms and it would be blazing hot. We would go in, you know, after the Labor Day holiday, and then we would stay in all the way, of course, till the end of May to get the required number of days in. Now it's a lot different. Kids are going back much sooner. Air conditioning plays a big factor in the schools. But what we've seen, especially over the last several years, is that there's about a 2 to 3 week period where everybody comes back and they get settled into the routine and everything seems to be going really, really well in the school districts. Attendance is like it should be. Everything's getting settled. They'll break for the Labor Day holiday, come back, and then about 2 to 3 weeks later, we start getting the first reports of illness in the school districts. And, you know, that is a big concern of ours, especially as we want to make sure everybody has had the necessary immunizations they're supposed to. And I mentioned a little bit ago, there is a schedule. Karen, I need you to kind of help walk folks through what the schedules are for immunizations for their children.
Sure, I can do that. So first of all, I'd like to say that with the health department, our registered nurses are vaccine or immunization experts. We have a lot of training that we go through in order to know what the schedules are, when is appropriate to give what vaccinations and such. So when you come bring your family to the health department for vaccinations, you're getting excellent care. We know what we're doing, and that's we are the experts. As far as schedule goes, when your children reach the age of 18 months, they should have a schedule where they've had 4 DTaP, which is your diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, 4 pneumonia vaccinations, the PCV13, 3 to 4, depending on which is given, of the Haemophilus influenza B, or you'll hear us call it HIB, 3 hepatitis B vaccinations, 3 polio vaccinations, 2 to 3 rotavirus vaccinations, depending on which one is given, 2 hepatitis A vaccinations, 1 measles, mumps, rubella, and 1 varicella, and that's by the age of 18 months. Then when you're looking at the school age kids, the 4 to 6 year olds, depending on if they're going to preschool or on through kindergarten, they should have those vaccinations that I just spoke of, plus the DTaP polio booster, the MMR, and a varicella booster. And at that age, at the entry of school, they would be considered up to date.
What happens when mom and dad or brings the kiddos in at, say that's a 5-year-old getting ready to go to kindergarten, okay? And we pull up their vaccination history, and we find out they're way behind on shots. What do we do?
What we look at is where they started those vaccinations, if they've had some or none. That is an indicator on how we need to proceed with their vaccinations. So we look at where they are, what we want to do as far as how to vaccinate them. We will provide a catch-up schedule. So normally you would have 2 months in between vaccines when you're looking at their early infancy and getting their shots. But when we're doing a catch-up schedule, we can actually reduce the amount of time that it takes or for them to get caught up with them.
But they don't become a pincushion. I mean, we don't them with every single thing. Sometimes, I guess the point I'm trying to make with all of this is sometimes if the child is behind, you know, and we do actually put them on a path to get them caught up quickly, but it's not like, I remember one time I felt so bad for the child. A mom brought me in and she said, give them all. And you might have been here, Karen, at the time. I couldn't believe my ears because I thought I felt so badly for the child, because I would not, as an adult, when I have 4 or 5 concurrent vaccinations on the same day. I mean, I cannot imagine that would have any effect on the child other than them feeling absolutely miserable and sick for the next couple of days if that were to occur. Now, in the long run, it may, you know, it would benefit them. But boy, I'll tell you what we want everybody to know is that if you do come in, and this is why it's important to start looking at this early, you know, let us work with you so that we can get your kids on a good glide path, so to speak, a healthy schedule. Allie, do you have something to contribute on this?
Yeah, so Karen was really specific when she was going through the different types of diseases that we vaccinate for. But one of the really neat things, especially at the health department, is that many of these diseases can be vaccinated in combination. So she listed a number of them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that would be pokes for the child. So some of these things are combined. She mentioned the MMR, that's measles, mumps, and rubella. That's fantastic. So keeping your kids up to date, being in regular conversation with your healthcare provider or the health department, we can make sure that we're giving your child as few specific vaccines as possible while still maintaining all of that coverage that Karen described.
Absolutely, that's correct.
Let's talk about why we do it. Number one, a lot of these are required by the school districts, by the state school systems. They are required vaccinations for a child to be able to actually attend school. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Each of the school districts, they have something that's known as an exclusion date. Let's talk about what that is and what it means. Anybody?
So exclusion dates, the different districts have them here in Cowie County especially, but they're consistent throughout the country and in Kansas. The dates vary a little bit, but you can be expecting sometime in October. And what that would essentially mean is that unless your child has an approved medical exemption or religious exemption, that they would be expected to have those required immunizations by that specific date. Otherwise, they would be asked to go and get those vaccines, and they would not be able to return to school unless they have all of those things taken care of and on file with the district.
And that is something that a lot of the districts do enforce, and we see that. And part of the reason why we want to have the conversation now is that we don't want your child to be hung up into that cohort at the time that it happens, because it is a madhouse. I think it was, 2 years ago, Karen, that one of the districts had said, okay, it's time. And it caught a lot of parents, I think, who thought they might not, you know, fall into that category, to have to scramble. And that was one of the few times, I think, that we didn't actually have enough vaccine on hand to meet the demand.
Yes, that's correct.
And we had to go ahead and make special arrangements, and we did with the school district. This was something else that the health department will do for you that we have the authority to do, that when we would schedule you for that appointment, for that vaccination, we then issued a letter to the school district allowing them to know when you were, your child was to be vaccinated so that they could return to school. But one of the things that goes into the definition of a successful school term is the attendance rate of the kids going in and the lack of interruptions for both the family and the child and the student. And so we really want to make sure that parents understand this responsibility is yours. Schedule this stuff early. See what they're going to need. Talk with us. We can review the child's immunization history, tell you what we believe that may be necessary, compare records with you, and then get them scheduled so that you don't have to be caught up getting the note or the phone call from the school nurse saying your child can't come to school tomorrow. And then you have to take off work, and it's a big hassle, and it's an emergency, and everybody's jumping back and forth trying to get kids in, only to find out then that you can't get the shot that day, and you're going to have to come back another time. So, you know, think about putting some planning into this and making sure that, you know, you get it done in a timely fashion so that everything goes smoothly as the kids go back to school. What other things could happen, Karen, if kids don't get immunized?
Well, other than
You can't go to school.
Right, exactly. But if there is, with your child having one of the diseases that are vaccine preventable, they can have long-term effects by them. Of course, when you think about even flu, you know, for most of us, people feel like, you know, the flu for a child, they're going to have a couple days of being, have a fever, feeling poorly. But there are complications that can go along with that. They can develop pneumonia and be out for a significant amount of time, losing valuable school time. Any of the measles, varicella, you look at if there's an outbreak of something like that and they have not had their vaccinations and they come down with that disease, you can develop more than just, you know, the rash, the fever. There is long-term effects with that as well. It can developmentally, you can have issues. You can also have where maybe with varicella, vision problems. There's just a whole array of implications when your child does not get vaccinated and comes down with the actual disease.
Karen, would you agree or disagree with this statement that we are in a better place today than we were 50 years ago as far as being able to keep our kids healthy due to the fact that we have modern vaccines?
Absolutely. You know, when you hear of stories from years past of the polio outbreaks and the iron lungs, that in order to keep people alive, they were put in what they considered iron lungs to be able to breathe. We don't see that, and that's specifically because we have had good response to our vaccinations. They are safe and they are effective, and they keep us healthy.
And many of them have been around for decades now.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there are a lot of folks, and this has been a result, I think, of the recent pandemic and the big concern about vaccinations. It's given a lot of people that are opposed to vaccinating their children, I think, some ammunition, saying, well, it's just really not necessary. Look, nobody gets this. I'm going to tell you right now, I lived through those days when we did not have the vaccines. And I actually have an individual memory from when I was in kindergarten and I became sick with the measles. And it was the summertime. It was about this time of the year. It was blazing hot. We did not have air conditioning in our home in those days. And I was home sick and I was miserable. So miserable that it is one of the earliest memories that I have that is that distinct. It was of me being ill. The doctor coming to our home to check up on me. I mean, that's back when doctors made house calls, believe it or not. And we had no vaccines. And my, you know, the look on my mom's face and everybody else's, you know, the concern and the worry they had of watching their child have to suffer through one of these illnesses was, you know, I didn't realize how bad it was until I became older and as an adult. And then I became a parent as well. And then I was amazed growing up as a parent to see new vaccines come on the market. We all had chicken pox.
Not me.
Not you.
That's right.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing. But we all had chicken pox. We all had that. We didn't get an opportunity to have a vaccination against whooping cough. If you got it, you know, you were up at night with a child who was gasping for breath and couldn't breathe and could cough and cough, cough, and a baby would be basically coughing its lungs out. You know, I'm going to ask a mom, imagine that. Imagine that that is your child and you have to go through this. If you've been blessed to grow up in the decades when those illnesses and those diseases have been pretty much eradicated due to vaccination, don't get caught thinking that they don't exist anymore. Those viruses, those illnesses still exist, and all they're waiting for are the right hosts to come along for them to reinfect a family again. If you choose not to vaccinate your children, you are putting their lives at risk. You're putting the lives at risk of your other children if you have them as well. And there is one other thing you've got to know. And as the public health officer in a location where if we have a school outbreak, where we have, say, a case of measles, or we have a case of pertussis that pops up, or even varicella, if your child is not immunized, they will be excluded at that point, and that exclusion will last for the entire incubation period plus, I think it's like plus 5 or 7 days, if I remember right, for what the guidance is on that. And so that means not just your child that could have been exposed, but maybe your entire family is going to have to be isolated. You know, you're going to go back into quarantine, and everybody loved that so much. Remember, it was what, 5 to 10 days? Allie, what are the number of days that it would take for varicella to emerge after?
So the incubation period for varicella is 21 days or 3 weeks, and that doesn't include the 5 to 7 that mm-hmm. you would tack on at the end of that, because people can still get sick outside of that. So we have to be sure if you're not vaccinated.
What about measles?
Measles is 12 days, so a little bit less, but still a couple weeks of school at least.
So think about that, and that is exactly what would happen, because you're not vaccinated at that point in time, and if you've been exposed, the probability is very good, especially with something like measles. I think, Karen, am I correct? Is it still the most
contagious
yes. virus that we have out there?
Yes, yeah. It sure is.
Now, I don't think there's anything that has passed that one up. That one was like you actually just walk into the room where somebody had it, or has it, and you walk into that room, even after everybody's gone, you can contract it just from what might still be lingering in the air. Mm-hmm. It is exceptionally, contagious. And we want people to understand that, because here again, you haven't lived through it. You know, we've been blessed. I know that a lot of people say, oh, we're going to get this from the vaccines, or, oh, they're not necessary, and it's just a bunch of malarkey. Well, until it is your child that's ill with it, and you have to go through that, and then you'll find out that it's really, truly not that malarkey. So anyhow, what other things do we do? Oh, I'm sorry, Allie, do you have something else?
Yeah, I was going to add, you know, we've talked about how we've been protected for so long. So especially some of the people who are closer to my age in their 20s and 30s, we don't have those lived experiences that you have. So these things are, you know, the perceptions are very different. But I wanted to tell people that Karen and I have done investigations for several of these things just in the last year already, for suspected cases, or even confirmed cases of mumps and things like that, measles. So these things, they're still out there, like you're saying, but there's even the threat of them locally, where we've had to intervene and act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't take, it only takes one case. And we talk about this almost in every podcast about how mobile we are, and we go from place to place. You know, you might be on vacation and you might get exposed to it at an amusement park or something like that. You don't even have any idea. It's a benign setting. And that now you're going to come home, and then we're going to start finding out, because it's going to be a more widespread outbreak. I think that's the way it was with the measles outbreak that we had a couple of years ago. It began in one of the amusement parks. I think it was like Disney World or Universal Studios, something like that. That was the main commonality that every family had that had the illness, is that they were at those amusement parks. So things to think about. Anytime you have congregations of people, we've gone through this, the probability for illness and disease transmission goes up. We've talked about that. We've talked about the exclusions, but let's talk about the process and the things that would happen during an appointment at the health department. Okay. So Karen, you're going to get to shine on this one, because we want to talk about not just the process of getting a kiddo in here to have their appointment, but what goes on in the appointment. We do assessments, we do all kinds of stuff. Talk about that for a moment.
Sure. Well, not only is the health department known for providing immunizations, but we provide health assessments for kids going into school for the first time, whether it is for their preschool assessment, kindergarten assessment, or if you're a individual that has moved from another district and need a physical, an assessment to enroll in school, we provide those. So with that assessment, we of course do the things like the health, weight, we do height, weight, vision screening, hearing screening. If your child is under the age of 6, we provide developmental screenings as well. So we can look at, is your child ready developmentally for school? And if, we can get them there by providing referrals to our outreach programs, like our early childhood reach that provides assistance with the parents in how to educate them, provide things that they can do to get their child ready for school. So we do that. We also do a lead screenings, where we can collect a small amount of blood from their finger and screen them for exposure to high doses of lead in their environment, which with that, it can cause developmental and growth delays. And so we're able to do that as well.
How long should a parent expect one of these appointments to last? When we're bringing a child in to do, we're going to call it the full well child checkup. Okay. The whole gamut, where we look at their background, we screen them developmentally. You know, we talk with mom and dad about, you know, their behaviors and everything else. How long does that appointment normally take?
Sure. Well, we schedule for each child an hour's worth of time. That provides us with enough time to get them checked in, for the nurses to look over their information as far as vaccines, whether they are allergic to anything, their allergies, to any issues they might have health-wise already, again with that developmental screening for the early childhood. We look at that, takes a little bit of time to go over and assess. So we give each one of those children an hour's worth of our time.
Now, for some people, that might be a drawback, or that might be a barrier. I mean, some parents say, "Gosh, I don't have the time. I have to work during the day, and those things are difficult." And so, sadly, I think a lot of kids fall behind on the health assessments of it. I want to stress too that when we're talking, what we're talking about today, there are not specialty appointments like for athletics. You know, we're not talking about a physical for a student that wants to go and be playing volleyball or football in the fall. Those are different. Those are different appointments altogether. But we do know that you know, it does take this amount of time. And it's especially important, I think, for the ones that are going to be entering school for the first time, that you do have these appointments set and made. What about other opportunities, Allie? What other ones do we have out there that will allow us the opportunity to interact with families and the kids to maybe get them the required immunizations that they might need? What other things are out there that the health department does?
Yeah, so we're pretty easy to get in contact with. You can use our mobile app. So if it happens to be after hours, you know, it's one of those things that you think about as you're going to bed. Oh man, I forgot to do this. You can inquire on our app and we'll go ahead and contact you the next morning to kind of make that easier for you. But we also have late night clinics where we're open until 6 p.m. And on those days, we're actually open through the lunch hour too. So we are open for business from 8 to 6. We offer those in both of our locations. We also do some different clinics with the schools. Karen's already gotten those set up with the two larger districts, and we're working on some of the smaller ones right now. But those are, you know, if you do, you know, delay these things a little bit, hopefully we can get your kiddo taken care of in the school district before those exclusion days. But in Arc City, we actually have a special immunization clinic coming up on July 19th, and we're going to be open that day from 8 to 6, and we're going to have prizes and giveaways, and it is going to be completely focused on getting these kiddos ready to go back to school with their vaccines.
Now, that clinic will not include the full blown health assessments that we do for children, right?
Correct. That's just
going to be a vaccination clinic where they come in, and we're going to go under the presumption at that point in time that they're healthy and they're on schedule, hopefully. But we will take a look at their vaccine schedule. Right, their vaccine history, to make sure that we see that they're not being provided more than what they need, but that we make up or we would hit the recommended vaccinations for their specific age group. And yeah, that, I think that's important for people to understand. It's not like you're coming in and we play pincushion with your child's arm. These are scheduled based upon age and developmental status. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one of the nice things that our nurses have access to is we refer to it as WebIZ. It's just the Kansas Immunization Registry, and the local school nurses have access to that too, as well as the Kansas physicians and things like that. So for the most part, everybody's looking at the same type of record, so we're not duplicating those things unnecessarily. But it makes it easier for you as a parent to guarantee that, hey, you send your kiddo to the health department, we get them taken care of, the school is going to know those things. So that's a huge advantage to coming to the health department for sure.
Yeah, that is one thing that I think a lot of parents need to understand. We do have seamless communication with the school nurses. One of the good things that came out of the pandemic was our ability to set a lot of things up for the communities, and the schools are always a focal point in each community. And we got to know the administrations of all of these, the school nurses, and they work with us a lot. They are troopers out there that with your kids on a day-to-day basis in school, and they have no problem picking up the phone or texting or emailing us asking for help. And when they know that the health department is working with your child, they take a sigh of relief too, because they know it's only a matter of time until they'll be able to open up that record and see the vaccination was in fact delivered. They don't have these things at the school. The health department does. We're the place to get the vaccines. And I think probably in our county, I don't have the exact numbers, but I know that we are probably the leading provider for vaccinations for children in Cali County, and we're proud of that record. We work hard to make sure that we keep your trust and we keep your kids healthy. So we've talked about those things. We know that we've got late clinics at our offices from time to time, and we're going to have school clinics. There will be other clinics that will come up, because we need to make a differentiation between those vaccines that are mandatory. In other words, they have to be there by school regulations or state law. And then we have our annual vaccine drives for like influenza, which are voluntary. And we have those a lot of times at the schools too. Mm-hmm.
We
go in and offer those on site to allow parents to have their kids be vaccinated against influenza. We go in and we vaccinate teachers. We will do anybody that wants to be vaccinated with their age-appropriate vaccine. How do those things work, Allie, as far as what should they know going into the school year about what to expect with that?
My biggest recommendation would be that you're paying attention to all of the correspondence that's coming from your local school district, because they will give you all those important details. The date, how to fill out our consent form, we now offer that electronically, so you can do that really quickly and you won't have to worry about your kiddo losing it, either unintentionally or intentionally. And we will work with the school districts to make sure we get everybody taken care of. Those things will then be put into the record, so the school will have them, your local primary care physician will have them. It's pretty simple.
Karen, we talked a little bit ago about, you know, doing well child checkups and those screenings and everything, and you mentioned something that, you know, if we see something that's not right, let's go back and dig into that just a little bit deeper, because indications can sometimes be misleading. I think back to the difference between a school age child and I'm going to pick on little boys. Okay, I think about a 4-year old little boy who's going to just turn 5, and where that youngster will be developmentally at that age, as opposed to another kindergarten aged little boy who did not qualify to make it in at, you know, the year prior, and he's closer to turning 6, but he's still 5 years old when he enters in. Is there a big difference developmentally between a, let's say, a 49-month-old and a 60-month-old?
There sure can be.
Yeah.
It just all depends, first of all, on that child's personality. If they are more of a shy individual, quiet individual, you may not see some of the things that they are doing. Maybe at home, when we go in and do our assessments, we spend a lot of time visiting with those parents about, you know, so is this a typical behavior for your child, or what do you see at home? And yes, there can be a wide range there. That doesn't mean your child is behind. It just means they're an individual, and we look at that, we take that into account, and we can bring them back in for rescreens, you know, and say, well, let's come back in 3 months and look at this again, provide them with some education and maybe some things that they can be doing at home to bring their child up to status, or, you know, more age appropriate actions and bring them back and rescreen them at a later date.
And sometimes those things are super simple, even like maybe start reading to your child to help with language development. So sometimes these things are not as scary as they sound.
Yeah. It I think that's the thing. We don't want people to put it off, say, oh, they're fine, you know, oh, it's a boy being a boy. Yeah, I was one of five and I have four, and you know, I know what having boys is all about. It's like you just might as well put everything breakable away because it's going to get busted. You don't play ball inside means, oh, play ball inside. Those things are what we see, you know, that are specific to little boys. And then my daughter was absolutely different. She was a tomboy. She was leading the pack. So, it all depends on the family status and everything else. I do want to talk one more time though, because I mentioned this early on in my comments. I remember the days when I'm like, oh my goodness, back to school, this is going to cost a fortune. How much does it cost for us to get our kids immunized?
It is extremely affordable. The health department in specifically works with families pretty closely. So even if you don't have health insurance, we will work with you to make sure that those things are affordable, either through a payment arrangement or maybe just breaking them up and maybe not doing all four at once and breaking them up that way. There's actually a program, it's referred to as the VFC program or Vaccines for Children. That program is for kiddos who are uninsured and underinsured, and it makes those vaccines just $20.25. So it's very easy to come to the health department and get these things taken care of.
We don't ever want cost to be the barrier to health. Especially for things that are preventable. And so that is a message I want everybody to hear loud and clear. You do not wait for your child to get sick. Don't. Because it costs you way more to deal with a sick child than it does to pay for a vaccine. And if you cannot, we will work with you. You know, if you were like I was and you had four or five kids and you had to get a whole bunch, oh my word, you know, it's okay. We've seen it. We understand. We're going to make sure that you have the vaccines available to you to make sure that you can keep your family healthy. And I think that's really one of the main things we want people to understand. So we've kind of covered all the topics. Allie, I know we had some numbers. Was there anything that I overlooked or missed?
No, you were right on the money.
Okay, so we know the schedules are out there. We really would welcome individuals taking the time right now. I mean, this is the time of year. I know it's hard to think about, you know, it's getting ready to go into the month of July and the holidays, but it's not going to be long. I mean, the 4th is going to be here next week. The fair will be here in a couple weeks after that. And boom, we're into August and then you're 2 weeks away from school. So now is really the time to give us a call. Start having the conversation, even if you have to set the appointment for a couple of weeks or so down the road, get it done now. Be, you know, at the front of the line. Don't be in the pack waiting and standing in line. This is like, you know, oh, we get to buy the pass and go right to the front. It's just basically picking up the phone, making a call, making the appointments with us, and having the conversations in advance so that we know what we're doing. And always, when you come in, make sure that you're honest with where you're at and what your concerns are. Ask your questions. We can't provide any information or any education or anything if we don't know what your concerns or your questions are. We've heard it all. Don't be afraid to ask us. And make a list if you need to. You know, if you have more than one kid, let's talk about how we can get those things scheduled, because you may have to break it up into a couple of appointments, but we can work with you early and late appointments, things like that. And I think that's pretty much kind of what we wanted to say, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Act early. Yeah. Act early.
Yeah, get it done. Don't wait around until the very end. And so that's going to basically conclude the meat and potatoes portion of this episode of Back to School on, you know, for the health of it, Cali County. Karen, Allie, thanks so much again for taking time out from your schedules today to join us in recording this podcast. Karen, your knowledge and your experience in public health nursing is so valuable. It's one of the things that makes our health department, I think, one of the best in the state. And Allie, I always appreciate your perspective and the data and the knowledge you've got that you can reach out and grab for me. So thank you both again for being here.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of For the Health of It, Cowley County. We hope you found it useful and that you'll tell your friends and give us a listen again during future episodes. As always, we end today's segment by replaying a recent Public Health Minute, which is a weekly radio message focused on keeping you healthy. So, until next time, stay well, everyone. Physical health and mental health are closely related. How you feel physically affects your state of mind. And conversely, if you're prone to worry or you're stressed continually, your body may react and feel physically sick as well. Historically, we as people tend to shy away from discussing our feelings, and we may deny that our mental well-being is so powerful that it can make us sick. But if you survived the pandemic, you know that mental and physical health are bound together. Simple gestures like a smile, a hi, how are you today, can be so very powerful. It seems we lost a bit of kindness while battling COVID, and we need to get it back. Today, I'm hoping that each of you have the best day possible, and that you share a smile with a friend or a stranger. Working to help you feel better mentally and physically, it's just one more thing that we do at the health department every day to help you stay well.